Come with me back to 1 Samuel. I am watching the clock and I know that RP is pretty concerned about the hockey tournament coming up. ETC, who won last year? Does anybody remember? Yeah, exactly. Exactly what I thought. Nobody cares. Actually, we do care while we're out there. It's a little bit of bragging rights. Who won at Camp Hope? Do you remember who won the Olympics? And nobody even remembers that. But it sure was a heck of a lot of fun, gotta say. And I'm looking forward to the park today. But come back with me for a few minutes to the text. And then I'm going to invite you to fill out this last card before we finish today. There's enough here for a couple of sermons, but let's see what we can find in 5 or 6 minutes. Hey, come with me down to verse 21, and we get to the second part of this incredible story. Hannah has prayed from the depths of her discouragement, prayer of desperation. If we have to learn anything from that prayer of desperation, it's that if we bottle it up and hold it in, we become bitter. And yet if we learn to pray from the depths, really pray, really trust Him, the reality of His presence becomes stronger than we've probably ever felt it. Well, we come to the next year and things have happened already. Hannah has become pregnant. In fact, she's given birth already to Samuel. And Elkanah goes again to the tabernacle at Shiloh, fulfilling his vows, as all good Israelites do. Women don't have to go, but devout women did, as Hannah did. But we have this situation now where she's got Samuel, likely only a month or two old. And Elkanah comes and he says, it's time for us to go up to the tabernacle again. And Hannah says, oh, sweetheart, or whatever word she would have used in those days, I'm going to stay home this time. Why? Well, one great reason is she said, I need to keep raising Samuel. I need to wean him. I'm feeding and I can't take him to the temple. Good. Important. In fact, there's no time to talk about this today, but one of the things that I think we fail to do a good enough job in as leaders at Southside is to actually talk about this, to talk about raising our kids, to talk about what it means to be a good mom and to raise our kids well. She put some things aside so that she might focus on raising Samuel. Well done, Hannah. But you need to know that she's raising him for service to the Lord. Another topic that would take more than we have this morning. But there's something slightly devious in her staying home that, you know, at first read you may not catch. Do you remember when she was in the tabernacle? How did she pray? She prayed from the depths of despair, but she prayed by moving her lips and no sound coming out. That's why Eli thought she was drunk. Well, why did she pray quietly? Well, it was private, right? Well, okay, that wasn't that big of a deal in those days. Except for, she couldn't help Elkanah hear her prayer. God, yes, Elkanah, no. Why Elkanah, no? Because the husband had the trump card. And if Elkanah had heard her prayer, that not only was she going to dedicate her son to the Lord as a Levite, but as a Nazarite, the Nazarite vow. He could have stepped in, trumped the card, and said, forget it, I'm not giving up my son. She knew that out of the depths of her heart, what she wanted for this child, if God would grace her with a baby, she wanted to give him to the Lord fully. So we come down to verses 24 to 28, and we see the dedication. The dedication, finally, a few years later, is Hannah has weaned Samuel, and they're now at the temple or the tabernacle. And she's responding to God's part of the vow. God has come good on his side. And now she needs to be faithful to hers. Hannah dedicates herself and her son. She's poured herself out, raising him for service to the Lord for 3 years. And now she comes to the tabernacle with a costly offering. Oh yeah, a three-year-old bull. Well, again, we could go into the sort of economics of that and how much that really cost her. Flour and wine and the importance of those kinds of things. Oh, but something far more costly. Her son. And now she comes back and has a conversation with Eli. Do you remember me? God has been faithful. And in fact, the very language that she uses in verse 27 is that God has entrusted this child to me. He's loaned him to me, borrowed him out to me. Why? So that I can return this child to him. That language is ripe in verses 27 and 28. She knows full well, even though she gave birth, he was never hers. He was the Lord's. And it's time to return him. And then verse 28. What's it say? Kind of weird. And he worshipped him there. Who's he? Samuel. But he's three. He's ready. Okay. What is this about? What does this say to us? A couple of things in point form and a promise to come back to them. We learn from Hannah and her prayer that we must dedicate ourselves completely to God. This is not a vow of or a promise of, if you do this for me, then I'll do that for you. This is, Lord, because this is who you are, how can I not but give 100% of who I am to you? No holds barred, nothing held back. In Hannah's prayer and in her action, she demonstrates a life completely sold out to him. Not only do we dedicate ourselves, but we dedicate our families, or specifically in this case, our kids. Three things. Our kids are not ours, they're entrusted to us by God. Has huge implications for how we raise them. Has huge implications for how we parent. Has huge implications for the priorities in our lives while our children are growing up. You see how we could take a few weeks just on that? Second, they're raised for a purpose. His purpose. Not our purposes. I've seen far too many fanatical parents on sidelines of soccer games or hockey games or something else to know full well that those kids belong to those parents for the parents' purpose. I can give you lots more examples too. They're not ours, and they're not for our purposes. So many times our own identity is wrapped up in what our kids do. More to come on that. Nor do we raise our kids for our kids' purposes. I see far too many kids in this generation with their identities misplaced because we've raised them thinking that they are something, that it's all about their purposes. They're for God's purposes. We are His, our kids are His. And good parenting is about raising kids for God's purposes. The third thing, and again, remember, we're going to come back. We need to come back to each of these three things. No time this morning. Scorecards are different. I get too many stories of parents that tell me that their kids are doing great. Well, fantastic. How come? Well, you know, Johnny's made the all-star team in baseball, and doing well in school, his grades are going very well, and boy, you should hear how he plays the trumpet now, it's just fantastic. All good stuff. But not the important part. I remember a time when there was a family at our church that came to me and said, "Hey, you know, we're not going to be here next Sunday." I said, "Oh, sorry, we'll miss you." "Yeah, we're not going to be here next Sunday because my son has an exhibition floor hockey game. And it's really important as we raise them to make them well-rounded, you know. And so we're going to be away next Sunday celebrating his exhibition floor hockey game." I didn't know what to say. Honestly, I didn't know what to say. I just stood there, sort of my mouth hanging open. I probably looked really, really dumb, like dumber than normal, perhaps even. You always think of the best response like 5 minutes later, don't you? I wish I would have responded. And why do you think that an exhibition floor hockey game is going to make your kid a more well-rounded than being here in God's people's presence, in God's presence, learning about him? What's the scorecard for Hannah? Well, you know, he can feed himself now. He's doing pretty good. He's 3. He's toilet trained. Well done, Hannah. Well, the scorecard is, and he worshipped him there. Friends, Hannah gets it right. It's not about a cultural Christianity. Of the tribe of Levi, she was supposed to dedicate her son to the Lord. But she goes further and says, "Lord, in the midst of my clan, having walked away from you, I'm going to walk towards you. And my kid's going to love you with everything." Why? How? Because she did. And in the midst of the depths of this pain that she feels, she cries out to him and avoids bitterness and comes to say, "Lord, this is about your purpose, not mine." Well, I wish we could spend another week on chapter 2, but let me focus on just the first couple of verses before I invite you to come. We're going to sing a closing song or two. Hannah prayed and said, chapter 2, 1 Samuel, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord my horn, strength, is lifted up. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance. There is no one like the Lord. There is no one holy like the Lord. There is no one besides you. There is no rock like our God." She's filled with gratitude. She's filled with this sense of thanksgiving. And how does she start giving thanks for God's goodness? Not even about her. Not even about Samuel. About him. "There is none like you. My strength has been lifted up." Why? Because you're strong. Not because I've done it. She boasts in him. He has done great things. Friends, take this card, and as we sing our closing couple of songs, I want you to finish this card and bring this card up to the front and dump it in that side. And what we'll do is on this one we say, "Lord, there is no one holy like the Lord. There's none besides you. You are good and gracious, and I thank you." But don't just put thanks on there. Do that. But also thank him for how good he is. Bring it to the front as we sing, "Lord, receive our prayers," and then we'll close in a few minutes.